Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly here, welcoming you back to the show. And as always, I hope wherever you are that you are safe and healthy and that everything is going well. And what a difference a week makes. It's spring has finally, well, it's more than spring. It's been closer to summer here on the west coast of British Columbia in Canada for the past couple of days. Looks like at least we have a glorious weekend coming up weather-wise. While I hear they're forecasting, or they've been actually experiencing some winter weather on the east coast of the country, which is, well, it's absolutely amazing, but strange times that we live in. So we got a fair amount of things to talk about in terms of Formula One news that has gone down in the past couple of days. So let's just jump right into it. And of course, the news in Formula One, as it is everywhere in this day and age, some days it's good, some days it's not so good, but hey, it is Formula One, and well, it's a distraction, but it's a pleasant distraction, and I think that's all what we need a little bit of at this point in time, something a little bit from normal times, our normal lives, so let's get to it. Anyways, like I said, it's some news is good and bad, and we'll start off with the bad news. Anyways, Formula One has revealed a very big drop in their 2020 income. And of course, this should come as no surprise. I mean, we'd already be several races into the season. I mean, we're coming up already here on the 9th of May. And that means that, well, this would have been the Spanish Grand Prix would have been next up. And of course, that is one of the races that isn't going to go ahead this year, obviously, or perhaps maybe later in the year, should things get back to racing at some point. Anyways, income for January to March in Formula One plummeted from $246 million in the same quarter in 2019 to just $39 million. And well, obviously that covered the period of losses, the loss of races that we saw for Australia and Bahrain. It's going to get worse before it gets any better. So those events would have been paid their hosting fees in advance. And Formula One has been quite clear that they have not recognized the payments as income. And it's done the same with their TV deals and a lot of their sponsorship contracts. So, again, not good news, but Liberty Media said in a press release, quote, "Since there were no events held during the first quarter of 2020, primarily the F1 revenue consisted of only the elements of sponsorship contracts associated with non-race related rights that were recognized during the period, and no race promotion fees nor broadcasting fees were recognized. Similarly, other F1 revenue decreased to zero, a revenue recognized from the Paddock Club and other event-based activities and television production activities. We currently expect no races to take place in the second quarter of 2020. And of course, if you go and look at what we've been talking about, the second quarter, of course, will take us right up until the end of June. And then unbelievably, we'll already be into the second half of the year in just about 6 or 7 weeks time, if you can believe it. I don't know. The days are weird right now. I mean, don't you think? I mean, some days they seem like they drag and they seem to be have this odd, weird, repetitive nature. And I mean, everyday reality is a bit strange right now. But at the same time, time is... I'm saying that old word a little bit too much right now, but it really is flying along, and I can't believe we're already in the second week of May, and we'll soon be heading into summer. Anyways, when you look at that, saying that they're expecting no revenue from races because there's going to be nothing taking place in the second quarter, that's very much in line with what we've been looking at over the past week or two. And what we were talking about on the show last week is that F1 is currently targeting the opening race of the year to take place at the Austrian Grand Prix at the Red Bull Ring in Spielberg, roughly about the 5th of July. So, of course, that's still almost 2 months away, and a lot can happen in 2 months between now and then. But you know, at least there is the potential that that could still maybe go down. We'll see what happens, of course. Anyways, Ferrari said that they're really hopeful that the losses that Formula One is experiencing right now because of the turmoil caused by the global shutdown as a result of the coronavirus, they hope that it's going to be short-lived through 2020, and obviously they're bracing for a big reduction in prize money and sponsorship income. I mean, everybody's tightened their belts, obviously. That goes for all of us here at home, whether we're working or we're not working. I mean, companies, corporations, everybody's doing the same. I mean, fortunately, a lot of governments around the world are thankfully putting out some sort of benefit for the people that and companies that have no revenue right now. But obviously, that's going to trickle over into Formula One. And, of course, all the 10 F1 teams are really, you know, bracing for a big fall in the revenue from the racing that's not going to take place this year because of the ongoing fallout from the COVID-19 pandemic. Anyways, Ferrari CEO Lewis Camilleri told investors that F1 is only one activity that would affect the company's financial results in the harshest manner this year, as well as by being the far hardest to predict. And, of course, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, Formula One, I mean, it's all got to do with the racing, the television, and everything that goes around the racing events itself. And until we get some idea that when racing is going to come back and what form that's going to take, we really have no idea. Anyways, Camilleri had to say, quote, "While the Formula One hit to revenues and earnings is not an easy matter to digest, the good news is that the significant losses incurred should be short-lived and contained to 2020. Our current thinking of terms of revenues, although it's somewhat unpredictable, in 2021, they should come back, certainly in terms of the races, which is a big part of it, and obviously also in terms of sponsoring. We know that the Formula One group has worked a lot in terms of trying to attract new sponsors. Obviously, the situation has delayed certain things, but hopefully by 2021, that will have come back. At this stage, we don't really foresee continued reduction in the commercial rights holder revenues in terms of Formula One for next year, all things being equal." End quote. Anyways, Camilleri also went on to say that he was really quite praising Formula One for what he called the substantial progress that the teams have made to cut costs in the sport going ahead, but said that there's going to be no possible to completely offset the big financial hit that they're all going to take in 2020. So, yeah, I mean, well, the budget cap is the one big thing that they've been talking about. But Camilleri did go on to say, quote, "Although if we reduce costs in Formula One, there's no way we can offset the hit to the revenues on the sponsorship fees, especially on the revenues that are generated by the commercial rights holder. The hit to the revenue essentially goes down to the bottom line with some minor offsets, but it's a big hit. And as I said, the good news is that it's confined to this year, hopefully," end quote. Yeah, and hopefully being the... well, that is the key word in that whole statement by Camilleri, the Ferrari CEO. Anyways, Claire Williams, team principal at Williams, says that she fears that Formula One could lose, quote, or what she says, quote, "an awful lot of teams," end quote, if they are unable to race at all this year, as plans still, well, the plans to get the season going, they change by the day, as you might well expect. I mean, with everything, I mean, we're all targeting some sort of new reality once we get past this whole coronavirus pandemic and there's treatments in place in some effective way to contain this thing. But, I mean, nobody knows where that is. I mean, it's not some hard line in the sand. It's not going to be some light that's or a switch that's going to get flicked and we're going to get the green light all of a sudden. So it is a moving target, and it changes day by day. Some days it seems it's closer. Some days it feels like it's further away. I mean, the one thing I think we all know is that things aren't going to go back to normal for a very, very long time. Anyway, so the latest thing is that, and this really hasn't changed much since last week. The whole idea, like I just mentioned, is to get the season going in the beginning of July at Austria, and they're still hopeful to get a 15 to 18 race schedule in at some point in this year. I mean, there's still talk that that it might run over into 2021. I mean, there's a lot of different things, and until we can actually have a firm date in mind and we know how it's going to happen. And well, we all know that regardless if they go back racing, that that is going to be behind closed doors. I mean, we're not going to see tens of thousands of fans sitting in the stands at the Red Bull Ring or anywhere else for that matter at any time soon. I mean, it really is kind of a question. Okay, well, this is how it was done this time. I mean, it's going to be an evolving process like everything else. It's going to evolve over each and every weekend. And as things improve or maybe and hopefully not maybe go backwards if there's a second wave of coronavirus later in the year. And let's hope and pray that that won't be the case. So, I mean, it really is a situation that will be rather fluid and will evolve as the situation dictates. Anyways, Williams, who was talking in an interview on Sky Sports earlier this week, had to say, quote, "It is scary. We could lose not just one or two teams, but an awful lot of teams if we don't get back racing. The financial model that we have in our sports means that we are all so reliant upon the money that we receive from the results that we get in the Constructors' Championship. You take that away and couple with the fact that sponsorship isn't at the level in Formula One at the moment and in sports in general, that makes trying to find a budget to go racing really incredibly difficult." End quote. So, yeah, I mean, that is the big thing, right? I mean, just in general, I mean, there hasn't been as much sponsorship around recently. And Williams, I mean, this is a team that they're not getting a lot of money from the points that they're scoring in the Constructors' Championship. I mean, last year they had, what, 1 point that Kubica scored? I think it was at that bizarre race at Hockenheim in the middle of summer, which, you know, was still one of the best races of the year just because of the unpredictable nature of the whole thing, just because of the heavy rain and that nobody could keep their cars on the track. It was absolutely wonderful. But anyways, I mean, she does make a good point that if you know, teams are looking to supplement the budgets that they have, that at least they know that the money that they can count on in terms of you know, revenue from the how they perform in the world in the constructors is one thing, whereas the sponsorship and getting the you know, companies and corporations to put their money into a Formula One team in one form or another is going to be always more of a difficult thing to do. But I mean, that is there's a lot to unpack in that statement. I mean, the way that she says, and she's obviously talking worst case scenario, saying that it's not going to be just one or two teams that could disappear if there's no racing at all this year. She's really putting out worst case scenario that it could be an awful lot more if things don't get going. I really don't know what to make of that. Obviously, this is something that that isn't really news. I mean, we've been talking about it, you know, bringing it up from time to time over the past several weeks, and even Christian Silf from Formula Money talked about it. Gosh, a million years ago when he was on last month, or at least that's the way that it seems, that that the longer that this thing goes on and the less money that's coming in because of the lack of races, it could really put several of these teams in really, really dire straits. So a bit of a dire prediction from Williams. Anyways, moving along, Chase Carey says that Formula One will not be handing out candy, in his own words, when it comes to dealing with the teams and its other partners. So Formula One is obviously in a very tough position because of being under some pressure to help with some financial support to the Formula One teams to help get them through the coronavirus pandemic situation and the other unintended, but obviously logical consequences, which involve all the other things that have been shut down in life, and Formula One being one of them. But anyways, he says that you know, they've been put under pressure to do, you know, to help the teams, but at the same time they're also struggling to try and generate some income and some revenue over the season. Anyways, a lot of race promoters are not expecting to have to pay their full fees for hosting races because there's going to be no fans in the stands, and a lot of the TV broadcasters and sponsors want to be able to renegotiate if they don't get what they obviously signed up to either broadcast or sponsor. And you can understand that, right? So, I mean, and of course, if revenue and income is a big thing, yeah, where's the money coming from? That's going to be a big thing for all the teams. Of course, it's going to be a big thing for Formula One as well. Anyways, Chase Carey said earlier this week, whether it was going to be the team's promoter, sponsors, or whatever, he said, and, you know, handing out candy, that's a kind of a blunt way to put it. He said that they're not going to be handing out candy to everyone. He said they expect to be treated fairly, and he says that they're going to deal with the situation as adults. So there's basically his exact words. And he said that the expectation is, and I think this is more of a hope when it comes down to it, is that 2021 next year, that things are going to go back and business is going to be like what we all knew it to be just a couple of months ago. So, you know, that is obviously the, like I was just saying just now, that is the big thing. We don't really know when things are going to get back to normal. And of course, that's going to be the one thing is like, once the sooner it gets back to normal, a lot of these questions are going to get removed and answered and sorted out. But until then, of course, different people are going to be looking for breaks. And you can understand, especially the small F1 teams, but excuse me, regardless if it's the bigger teams or the smaller teams, everybody's taking a hit right now. And just because you have a bigger budget and more people doesn't mean that you're hurting any less or more than, say, one of the other teams. Obviously, the smaller teams are going to feel it because they have less resources to deal with. But, you know, I think that probably a lot of it is going to be proportional, unless you're Ferrari or Mercedes and you're backed by a company with extremely deep pockets. Carey did go on to say that it was very difficult at the moment to really sort out and complete arrangements just because the whole situation regarding what the calendar is going to look like this year, if and when it eventually gets going, is just really fluid, right? So anyways, he had to say, quote, "I think in terms of the teams, 2020 for us and the teams, we're not going to have the results we expected to have when we started the year. And I think everybody is doing what they can to shore up. Right now, there are too many moving parts. There are so many what ifs. I don't think that it's constructive to address parts of it. I think we need to get far enough along in these plans to know where we're at. We expect the teams to be taking the right initiatives to get them through it. The prize fund is a contractual formula, so the prize fund is what it is. Realistically, we couldn't unilaterally change it if we choose. To expand upon that, it's a percentage of profits, and profits will be down, and the prize fund would be down." End quote. So there you go. That's basically all laid out there in a very brief summation by Chase Carey. Anyways, time for a quick break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. All right. Well, welcome back to the podcast. As always, up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. So yeah, we're going to go back now and talk a little bit more about what things may or may not look like this year, just considering that the whole calendar is up in the air at the moment. I mean, the Austrian Grand Prix still on the calendar. It is still 55 days out, 2nd of July to the 5th of July, should it go ahead. And anyways, there are extra venues that are in contention to be added to the schedule this year that were not originally set to have a race this year. And well, I mean, that's again comes from the mouth from the big man himself, Chase Carey. He's also been quite open now, saying that the schedule could well run into 2021 in an attempt to get the season done and get the 15 to 18 races, which they're really hoping to get. I mean, if they could do it, I mean, it would be absolutely, I think it would be nothing short of miraculous. I mean, we're going to have 22 races this season, should it have all gone off without a hitch, which obviously was going to be the biggest and longest, most challenging year ever in Formula One. So, I mean, if they can even salvage 15 races out of that, I mean, that would be, I think, obviously best case scenario. If they can get anywhere between 15 to 18 or even get the maximum 18, I think that would be absolutely wonderful. But again, of course, that really is very dependent on the what ifs and what's happening everywhere else around the world. Anyways, he didn't, carry that is, didn't go into any details, but Imola, Hockenheim, and Portimao have all indicated that they are interested in having a behind-closed-door events. Imola and Hockenheim, those are ones that we've been talking about, or they've been in the news the past couple of weeks. Hockenheim, that's a kind of an interesting one. I mean, that's been a little bit hit and miss the past couple of years. I mean, it was off the calendar a couple, you know, I mean, it was on last year, but I mean, it's been missing in recent years. We weren't going to have a German Grand Prix there this year, but they did say, I mean, we were talking about last week on the show how the director, the president of the track there did say that they'd be open to hosting a Grand Prix there this year behind closed doors if the circumstances would permit it. However, that was it sounded like to me that it was more of a, yeah, that would be great if we could do it, but it was admitted that it, you know, there was nothing more than an expression of interest. I mean, nothing of real substance to at least what I've been able to find through the news over the past couple of several days, just doing a little bit of research there for the show. So I mean, who knows? Anyways, those are three venues that are potentially on there. And Kerry said that, you know, they've basically been working around the clock since the Australian Grand Prix was canceled almost 2 months ago now. And he says that, and this is, right from, his mouth again, he said that they're actively engaged with the promoters to put a 2020 race calendar together. And, well, they've obviously got a couple of big challenges. One is going to be which racetracks, which venues can hold a race. And then obviously, if you know where you're going to race, how are you going to get everybody there? All the team personnel and the equipment and, keep them, I guess, isolated and all that. Because, I mean, a lot of places, I mean, here in BC where I live, we're under like a 14-day, it's not a travel ban, but if you come in from, especially internationally, you have to register. You have to go into quarantine for 14 days. I mean, there's checkups to make sure that that you stay in self-isolation if you've arrived back in Canada during that time. And that's not unique here. I mean, it's pretty much very similar all across the country. I mean, if you do not have a quarantine plan in place when you get home, you know, the government's going to take you off and put you in a facility. I mean, you're not getting put in jail or anything like that, but they do have contingency plans for people that for one reason or another are not able to sufficiently look after themselves. You know, they might not have family support for instance, or transport or something to get groceries and things like that. So there are different places that, that the government has set up where people can go and be quarantined and looked after and supported during that. But, you know, I mean, it's logistics, right? When it comes down to Formula One. Okay, so we end up having, I don't know, pick any Grand Prix you want. Say we get this German Grand Prix at Hockenheim behind closed doors, like they've been talking about. Okay, so you got to get all the teams from wherever they're coming from. They're either going to be coming from, from England, Italy in some cases, So, I mean, there have been talks about different things, having a reduced number of personnel and things like that. But I mean, it's just logistical. How are you going to get people in? How are you going to get them out? How are you going to get around some of these things like 14-day, isolation requirements? If it's, that's a thing in one of the places that they're going to be racing. I mean, we saw that in Australia after one of the McLaren team personnel tested positive for a coronavirus and had to stay there. And a lot of the team personnel stayed there as a support measure to stay there and be there for their teammate. Anyways, you can't take people in and keep them there for 14 days. I mean, especially if we're looking at having a 15-race calendar, I mean, there's going to be some back-to-back weekends. I mean, it's just bound to be at some point. And what are you going to do? Just move them around and have them self-isolate or keep them all contained for 14 days, you know, like several days either side of the event before they move on to the next one? Who knows? So, I mean, it's a tough, tough thing that they're going to have to try and do. Anyways, you know, the one thing that Kerry was saying is that, you know, they are still looking to get that July 4th and 5th. That is the date that they are really, you know, putting out there right now. And he's saying that it's, and this is, I think, a key statement. And he says, quote, "It's likely we'll race the weekend of July 11th and 12th in Austria as well." End quote. So that is a new one. That is not something that that I've previously heard thrown out there in the past week or so. I mean, that date of July 5th and July 4th, 5th weekend, that is the hard date that they're looking at to getting the season going. But I think, you know, they have talked about doing some other things. They were talking about having a night race there or something like that. They were, or a midweek race. I think they were talking about like the Wednesday. That was kind of thrown up there, and well, I guess that's probably maybe 2-3 weeks ago now. Excuse me, but this new one, just pushing it to the second weekend, it's not completely a new thing. It's just a slight twist or slight variation on the plan that was there, but it sounds like it makes sense, you know. Anyways, Kerry had to go on and say, quote, "We're in the advanced stages of putting together a schedule of additional European races through early September, including races in the traditional August break. We plan to race in Eurasia, Asia, the Americas in September, October, November, before finishing in the Gulf and Bahrain and Abu Dhabi in December. We hope to have a calendar with 15 to 18 races. We expect the early part of the calendar to be races without fans, but hope to allow fans to attend in the latter part of the year." End quote. Again, that's really going to depend on local circumstances. I know here in BC, where I live, our provincial health officer has just said that large gatherings is going to be, it's not going to be happening anytime soon. The local, the provincial government announced the, you know, the preliminary or the first steps to getting back to normal, which are going to come in shortly in the next week or two. And it's going to be a gradual sort of thing. But, you know, having gatherings of 50, 100, 500,000 people, it's not going to happen. In I chair a committee for my professional association, and we had our AGM that was going to be taking place in downtown Vancouver in the middle of March. That got scrubbed and canceled, along with so many other events that I mean, it really, things were just getting canceled left, right, and center. Anyways. So that went to an online, a virtual sort of thing, and a lot of the seminars and whatnot are now been made available on video. Anyways, the point is that you know, we've started to plan for our AGM and our professional development seminars for our next big get together and AGM, which is next well, it's going to be next March or April. So we're looking, you know, 11, 12 months down the road. And we're at this, you know, already at this this point. It's like, what are we planning for? Are we planning to have an actual in-person meetup? Or is this going to be the same sort of thing? Because, you know, like we have, you know, I mean, until they lift the numbers, if, you know, say at that point we could have like 500 people, it would be a bit of a moot point, because that would be, I mean, that would still be a fairly well attended, you know, AGM and seminar sessions and stuff like that. But if it's still only 50 or 100 people, you know, that's, you know, what's the point of putting on a big event like that or preparing for it when, you know, it's just doesn't really seem worth it. So we're at this sort of fork in the road of how to plan for things. Is it going to be in person as usual, or is it, are we planning for some sort of restrictions, or are we planning that perhaps we may have to do it all again next year in an online environment? So again, I think that really depends on, you know, if they want to have races with fans in attendance later in the year. I mean, obviously that would be awesome. I mean, that's what we all want. That's what we all want to do, is go back to the track and go back to our normal lives and do these things again. but it's really going to depend. I think where a lot of these races are going to be and how the situation is at that date and time. It just there. I don't see it happening any other way. it just can't at this point. Point in time. I mean, one thing is too, and this was a bit of a point aside, is the Mexican Grand Prix, the Autodromo Hermanos Rodriguez, where they've been racing for the past several years, is actually being transformed into a temporary field hospital for coronavirus patients. And so anyways, you know, it's been going on. There's over 20,000 confirmed cases in Mexico as of a couple of days ago. And so one of the things that we've seen everywhere is that that doesn't matter where you live. The big fear is that this thing is going to come. It's going to hit so many people that so many people are going to get sick at one time, and so many people are going to need treatment that, in a hospital setting, that it could overwhelm, like a healthcare facility. So anyways, in Mexico City, what they've done is that they've actually transformed the paddock club part of the Autodromo Hermanos Rodriguez to a makeshift hospital. And I think that, I can't remember, I think it's a couple hundred beds. And it's kind of, there was something, it's a different modules or something like that. I think that has a couple of dozen beds each and a bunch of intensive care beds as well. So anyways, we've seen a lot of different areas facilities repurposed for things like that. I mean, they did that here in Vancouver with the Vancouver Convention Center. And basically they set up into a temporary hospital facility with several hundred beds. But that was more for patients that could be moved out of hospitals safely, that didn't need, really intense care and support and things like that. Whereas obviously people that had obviously more serious medical conditions and or treatment for coronavirus would go to the, stay in the proper hospitals. Anyways, I mean, it's just a sign of the times. Anyways, so just to stick it with the whole thing, the whole logistics of it, it's going to be very interesting to see how they do it. I mean, the one word that's being thrown around there a lot this week is the biosphere. Anyways, Ross Brawn, who's the motorsport director for F1, and he's talked about this too, the biosphere in which paddocks personnel can work and be safe. And so basically the plan is for any of the team personnel and drivers that would be there would be tested for coronavirus before leaving their home country, and then tested every couple of days to make sure that they're still healthy. Once they actually are cleared for travel, they'd have to travel on chartered flights, stay actually in hotels that are dedicated to F1 personnel only, and then go back home after having minimal amount of contact with people that live locally. And of course, I think that's why the Red Bull Ring makes a lot of sense, because number one, it's a very remote location as it is. I mean, it's just one of my favorite locations. I've never been there, unfortunately, not yet, but I mean, I've been to Austria many times in my life. It's a beautiful, wonderful country. And I just love watching the races there. It's just it's very, very picturesque. Excuse me. So anyways, one of the things that help it is its remoteness, the fact that it doesn't have a big population nearby. There's a military airfield not so far away, and there's adequate eating and dining facilities, kitchen facilities at the circuit. There's a large dining hall there and in the media center that could accommodate most of the people that are working there. And the paddock club, which is usually reserved for VIPs or people that have a lot of money to spend on getting a paddock pass for the weekend. But it is that's the way that Formula One's going to have to operate. They're going to have to be as self-contained as possible, and they're going to have to be on top of these things. But it is interesting, this is a bit of a different approach than say a week ago. I mean, Andreas Seidel, team principal at McLaren, said that you know, he's all for this sort of increased testing in Formula One, as long as Formula One is not taking away resources, medical resources, and tests for COVID-19 for people, you know, the general public that might need it. So how they manage to pull that one off, that's going to be you know, interesting. And again, that's just really going to depend how that unfolds over the next weeks and months as they get these things figured out. Anyways, time to take another break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today, we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
All right. Well, welcome back to the show. So sticking with the theme of the F1 biosphere, the bubble, whatever you want to call it, should they get the season going? Anyway, so just to I've got a statement here from Ross Brawn that was I found in an interview that he made to Sky Sports F1 this week. Anyways, he had to expand on it saying, quote, "The FIA are doing a great job putting together the structure we need. Everybody will be tested, and we will have clearance before they can go into the paddock. And then every 2 days, they'll be tested whilst in the paddock. That will be an authorized authority, and we will keep that system, certainly for all European races. We'll be using the same facilities to conduct that testing. We can ensure that everybody is in tested and within that environment and tested regularly," end quote. So it sounds like obviously they're going to have some sort of very thorough way to test and track and make sure that everybody's staying healthy and you know, keeping on top of it should they get ahead. Anyways, now let's go ahead. One more. Zach Brown, the CEO of McLaren, always stop and listen when Brown has something to say. I think I like the way that he does business. I like the way that he carries himself, and the way that I find him quite forthcoming. I think that he's got a good head on his shoulders, and I like to hear what he has to say. Anyways, he had he had some ideas or some thoughts on what's going to to happen once the season gets going. He says that F1 is ready to start, but he believes that that they're going to hit a glitch, to use Zach's own words. So he goes on, he was talking about how, this is something we've mentioned on the show here too, is that they need a minimum of 8 races to have a season and to have it qualify as a world championship. And Brown is actually fairly optimistic that at the moment that they'll actually get more than 8 races in. Anyways, so he's echoing what Chase Carey is saying, that they're looking at a schedule of 16 to 18, you know, somewhere in there. That 15 to 18 is really that sweet spot. Anyways, he is not 100% sold on that, even though, Carey is. Zach says that if he had to put his money on it, it would be somewhere in the neighborhood of 14 to 15 races. And I don't have any inside knowledge, but obviously. If I had to put some my own money on it, 15 to 18 would be, you know, awesome, but it seems like a bit of a stretch, just considering all the uncertainty that's out there. That seems like a real stretch in my mind to get that many races this year. So I think that Zach, I think being more conservative on it, I think 14 to 15 races at 10 tracks, that seems more realistic to me for some reason, especially know, the idea to have two races in Austria over two weekends, that to me seems like quite a sensible way to do it to get going. So who knows? He did go on to say that that the idea is to have a couple of races in Austria, a couple of races in England at Silverstone, and then you could see if there's no problems or issues with the traveling part. He believes that we might see some what he calls doubling up at other races and other venues as well. So he says that he doesn't think that's the intention to like run races at multiple racetracks on multiple weekends to become the norm. But again, he's being a very I think down to earth. I think he's being very realistic and conservative on the whole issue. And he had to say, quote, "But I'm going to assume that we're going to hit a glitch somewhere along the way," end quote. There you go. I think that's the only way that you can look at it, that it sounds like the season's going to get going at some point this year. And they're just going to be able to have to think on their feet when the glitch, as Zach puts it, comes along. Anyways, Zandvoort, the Dutch Grand Prix, was going to be on this year for the first time since, what was it, 1984? It's been a long time. Anyways, that was one of the races that was unfortunately canceled as things everywhere got canceled earlier this spring. And Zandvoort said that they will host the Dutch Grand Prix this year behind closed doors if and only if Formula One covers the cost of the race. And that comes to the sporting director of the track, Jan Lammers. It was supposed to be on the calendar. So it's 35 years. I got it in my notes here. So it was going to be, it was going to be last weekend. I lost all sense of space and time here. So yeah, May 3rd, which is, would have been this past weekend, last weekend, would have been the first Dutch Grand Prix since the 1980s. Holland, like a lot of European other countries, has banned all major public events until September at the earliest. I mean, like I said, here where I live, there's no until September. It's until further notice. Lammers said that they would host the rain without race without the fans if Liberty Media steps up and covers the operational cost to make up for all the loss in ticket revenue. Anyways, Lammers said the fact that we won't be earning anything from it and we would invest a lot of time and energy into it is a way we would be helping the sport as well. But it has to be a responsible thing for Circuit Zandvoort, especially from a financial point of view. To put it simply, it shouldn't cost us any money. So if FOM and Liberty want to hold a race at Zandvoort without fans, they have to pay for all the operational costs. And that's quite a substantial amount of money, end quote. Yeah, well, that's going to be interesting. I mean, Chase Carey was saying that they're not going to be handing out candy. There's not going to be a lot of free handouts because obviously their money's down. But again, it'll be interesting. I mean, Imola said, their sporting director said a couple of weeks ago that that they would be, I think he basically said that they would be willing to host a Grand Prix there and not charge Formula One anything for it. So whether or not that means they expect Formula One to pay for all the operational costs, I would assume so. Seems reasonable to me. Also, I don't think what Jan Lammers is saying is a very unreasonable thing either. I mean, you can't spend money that you don't have. And if you start spending the money you don't have in the form of credit, you're going to be hurting. Anyways, let's talk now about money. Why not? Hey, we've been talking about money in Formula One for the past several weeks, so why should we change now? Anyways, Racing Point. Yeah, remember those guys? And I didn't call them Force India this week. That seems to be my default thing whenever it comes to talking about the Racing Point. Anyways, they believe that the new cost cap can be a performance leveler, and that is what team principal Otmar Szafnauer said. And so the teams have already agreed in principle to move the cost cap limit from $175 million down to $150 million as a result of the economic hit that they're all going to take because of the coronavirus pandemic. And this is no surprise. I mean, we've talked about some of these stories over the past couple of weeks, but the teams, they can agree on $150 million, but then you know, the solidarity disappears. It's not quite there when it comes to lowering that below 150 million. Anyways, Ferrari said they are unwilling to go below 145 million, and McLaren have gone drastically lower than that. They want it down to $100 million. Anyways, Safnauer said, quote, "The only thing that we have to remember is that with the cost cap, you don't have to spend the money. You don't have to, even if the cost cap is 170 million. We at Force India, for example, in dollar terms, with all the exclusions, we used to spend at just over $100 million, say $110 million. But there are a lot of exclusions. So if you take out the exclusions, my guess, we're in the spending around $70 million. And that $70 million got us fourth in the Constructors' Championship and a few times in 2016 and 2017. If you're at $170 million, it doesn't mean you have to spend $170 million. But what it does mean for you to win, you've got to spend that $170 million. So the cost cap is also a leveler in terms of competitiveness, really, and the performance you can get out of it. We've got to be careful that we're not just saying cost cap for financial reasons. The cost cap also helps with closing up the field," end quote. And that is true. You know, when he's going back and saying that they spent $70 million that got them fourth in the Constructors' Championship twice in recent years in 2016 and 2017. And, you know, I've said that for a long time, that that Force India was a team, and I'm referring to Force India now, not Racing Point, but they were the team that could do more with less. And they started to lose that, you know, that effective way of spending things right at the very end there a couple of years ago when, Vijay Mallya had to turn off the taps. I mean, he's obviously had his own legal issues over the past number of years. But that's why it was it was meant to happen when Lawrence Stroll came in with his group to buy out the team in midway through 2018. And once they were able to inject some new investment and money into that team, you saw an immediate improvement. Last year, they were a bit of a disappointment, but they showed from time to time that that they have something. And that's why it's going to be interesting to watch this team. Who knows about this year? This year is going to be a bit of a, I don't want to say a throwaway year, but it's going to be a weird year when it finally gets started. But I think certainly for myself, I'm looking more towards 2021 when Racing Point becomes Aston Martin, and see how they see what they do then. But historically, that has been a team that's done less, and that is interesting. You know, that when he makes that Safnauer, that is, makes that distinction, that just because the cap's at 170 million or 175 million doesn't mean you have to spend that much. But if you want to win, you're going to have to spend that much. I mean, you can spend 70 million or 100 million and, just kind of show up. Although that sounds kind of ridiculous if you're spending like $100 million on something and you're not going to be getting something out of it. You're going to get something out of it, but you might not be winning. But I think that's a fairly astute observation by Otmar Safnauer. Anyways, sticking with Racing Point, they do believe that they're going to have the lowest budget in Formula One. And Safnauer, this is still a little bit more on the building on that interview that he gave. He said he's referring to when Lawrence Stroll came in 2018. He said obviously when Lawrence came in, he gave them a bigger budget, and it was significantly more money than they had under the previous owner, and it was bigger. And I mean, Safnauer does actually go on to quantify it. It was 30-40% more than what they had at the time, that's what they're working with nowadays. But he still believes that they have the lowest budget in Formula One and the least amount of people in the pit lane, and that is true. I mean, like I say, I mean, they've always punched above their weight in terms of what they've been able to do, but they've also been able to do it not only with less money but also with less people. So I mean, this has always been a team that's been fairly resourceful. And again, when it becomes Aston Martin next year for 2021, that's why I think it's going to be very interesting to see that, not only how are they going to perform on the track, but also off the track. Are we going to see more investment in terms of resources in people and equipment and all those sorts of things? One would expect so, right? I mean, Stroll has really put his money where his mouth is. I mean, he invested to save that team. from going under. I mean, a lot of the cynics out there are like, well, he's just a rich guy buying a team so his son can race in Formula One. And that's, I hate that one. I really do. And I'm not just sticking up for Lance because he's a fellow Canadian. I just find that a bit of a weak stance to take. Anyways, I mean, like I say, Lawrence has put his money where his mouth is. He's invested in the team Racing Point, but he's also invested with his consortium massive amounts of money into Aston Martin itself. I always get the pounds and the dollars mixed up, but it doesn't matter. If you're talking about 500 or 600 million pounds or dollars, it is a hell of a lot of money. So Lawrence is really putting a lot into it. And Aston Martin, they're going to bring everything, into the racing program as well with, the Force India Racing Points, Aston Martin Racing Team, whatever you want to call it, F1 team, that is. So it will be interesting to see how that also comes out in terms of people in the racing operation itself. Anyways, time for one final break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We've got a bunch of stories to go over here before we wrap it up this week. And, well, we got some more Racing Point stuff to talk about on the other side of the break. So don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment. All right, well, welcome back to Scuderia F1, and boy, I mean, I said off the top of the show that time seems to really fly and drag at the moment, and that's oddly the macrocosm of the microcosm that is this podcast. It kind of drags along, but at the same time, it also really flies by. So there you go. Some self-defeating humor there, or maybe not. Maybe there's truth in jest. Anyways, no egos led to the Mercedes-inspired pink Mercedes Racing Point, whatever you want to call it. And that's from the mouth of Racing Point technical director Andrew Green, who feels that what he calls a lack of egos allowed his team to walk away from their ethos for their aerodynamic concepts and design, and adopt the 2020 Formula One cars design, which is obviously a Mercedes inspired approach. Because I mean, the W10, which was Mercedes cars last year, is pretty much, well, I'm getting back to front here, the RP20, which is Racing Point's car for this year, is basically a carbon copy of last year's Mercedes W10. So the basically the RP20's overall aerodynamic concept is now the low rake concept that Mercedes has been using for quite a while. So Racing Point had to drop basically what they gone with the Red Bull inspired high rake approach that they'd been using for the past several years. Anyways, Green feels that the approach they took is not something that other teams in the paddock would have done. And he said in an interview, quote, "There are no egos involved when we make these sorts of decisions. I think that's a big plus for us. And I think that's why a lot of the teams wouldn't be able to do what we did, because there's too many egos involved. There's too much, oh no, that idea is not invented here syndrome. We'll do it our way because we know better," end quote. So yeah, I mean, that's fine. I mean, there's one thing to kind of walk away from one concept that isn't working and try and do something that's completely different. And obviously, I mean, a lot of teams are going to be looking at Mercedes, because why wouldn't you? I mean, they've been absolutely dominant in Formula One for the past good number of years, and usually not by a small margin. I mean, they have been in the best in Formula One in terms of chassis and engine and drivers is another thing. But I mean, there's only one Lewis Hamilton, guys. Let's be fair about that. But anyways, I mean, when it comes to like going with the new aero concept, yeah, that's a big thing. And of course, we know that Formula One's all about egos, and you can understand that you wouldn't want to walk away from a design concept just on a whim. But, you know, it is going to be interesting, because there were talks, that there might be some legal challenges about this car, the RP20, that is. And I mean, it's one thing to, copy a design concept, and I mean, it does look fairly similar, Obviously, it does. I mean, there's no disputing that. But, I mean, just because they go with a similar design concept doesn't mean that they completely, copied them. I mean, they're using a lot of different things. But, I mean, it'd be a different thing, and I'm not making any accusations here. I mean, if there was some sort of industrial conspiracy going on or espionage, whatever you want to call it, that's a different matter. But, you know, I mean, I think we're beyond that. I mean, that there was that scandal in Formula One more than a decade ago with was a McLaren and Ferrari. I can't remember the teams at the time that were involved, but you know, that is always a possibility. I mean, Formula One is a small world, and people go back and forth between teams, but you know, they are bound by non-disclosure agreements and confidentiality, things like that. So you couldn't do and bring design concepts over from Mercedes and into Racing Point without some very serious repercussions. But you know, should there ever be a legal challenge to the design of the car? Well, who knows? I don't know if that would really fly or not, but I think it would have to do. Yeah, I think the form that the challenge would take from whoever made the complaint against Racing Point, should that ever come to pass. So, anyways, I mean, at least from Racing Point's idea, I mean, or their point of view, it's interesting that that they did decide to make such a drastic change. And you know, the numbers, the times that they were posting in winter testing in Barcelona a million years ago back in February, and it really does feel like a million years ago now, they were actually quite promising and quite good. So, you know, at least from a testing point of view, they saw some results with it. Whether or not it would have led to more, actually in the race itself, that it would have, manifested into better results on the track, we won't know until the season gets started, if and when. All right, well, just sticking with the budget cap. So apparently the discussion, or sticking with it, going back to it, I should say. So the discussions are at the very final stages, and Ross Brawn says that the plans to lower the budget cap to 150 million dollars are now close to being finalized, and said that the big sticking point is how far that this number can come down in subsequent seasons. So so obviously, like I was saying just now, the idea was 175, and the recent discussion brought that down to 150, 145. So they're talking about bringing it down to 130 for the second year of restrictions in 2022. But, as I was saying earlier, that, Ferrari is very reluctant and very resistant to go down to 130 million. Anyways, Brawn had to say, quote, "I think the details will be going out to the teams in the next few days. There's been a lot of consultation. I think we're now at the very final stages, so it'll all be become clear shortly. The budget cap's initial objectives were more of a competitive field, and I think this, with the situation we have now, the economic sustainability of F1 is a priority. I think that counts as much for the big teams as it does for the small teams, and it's become very clear from the people who stand above some of the team principals and management of these teams, the message is clear, we've got to cut costs," end quote. So another thing that they're looking at is customer cars, and this is something that's been kind of thrown out there, there's all sorts of drastic things. Anyways, Zach Brown over McLaren believes that if some of the front-running teams offer customer cars to, say, some of the midfield or the cellar dwellers, they should be done so for free. If they're really serious about doing it and sort of being altruistic and as a cost saving measure. So basically, what the idea would be is to they're looking at all sorts of different ideas to cut costs because of the big hit that they're all going to take because of coronavirus. So a lot of the ideas that obviously is that the 2020 cars are going to be carried over into 2021 to save on the development costs, because the 2021 cars that were going to come in under the new rules, that was going to be pretty tight, even if we didn't have this whole epidemic or pandemic situation to deal with. Even in normal circumstances, it was going to be a real push. Anyways, so they've put those on ice for a couple of years. We're not going to see that come in next year's planned. Anyways, so Red Bull team principal Christian Horner said last week that F1 should, and he did say could, he said they should consider using customer cars to help the smaller teams. So basically allowing the smaller teams to use a year-old chassis from one of the front-running teams. So he says it's the fastest way to achieve competitiveness and, you know, in the cost-effective model. And so basically he said to sell them a whole car that they finish the race with in Abu Dhabi. So that is interesting because, you know, despite the fact that the regs are basically frozen for next year, Racing Point Technical Director Andrew Green says he does expect to see the cars used in 2021 will look slightly different despite the designs from this year being redeployed as a cost-saving measure for next year. So they're going to have a token system again, which we've seen in the recent past as well. That will allow development in limited areas, and because I mean there's ongoing negotiations over the you know Formula One in the future and all these different things. So he says, or Green expects that this will lead to a restricted amount of visual upgrades. Anyways, he said in an interview, quote, there's a big push to try and maintain much of the design up and down the pit lane going into 2021 to reduce the car costs. So I think we'll see a significant amount of carryover from all the teams. I think some of it is going to be enforced by regulation and some of it is just going to be enforced by the timelines that we're working to now. With everyone sitting at home not working, you can't develop this car. There's no development happening. So you're naturally moving forward this year's car racing next year. End quote. So yeah, there you go. Yeah, I mean, there probably will be. I mean, we didn't. We saw a little bit of change in the cars for this year, but I think it is an interesting thing that they want to do that. But I mean, Zach Brown, I think you know he makes a good point that if they're really serious about trying to save money. Yeah, like why not? I mean, just to hand over the car, or if not free, which you know seems like a very big you know expectation for them to do that, you know, do so to drastically reduce cost, you know, help everybody out. You know, the more that they circle the wagons and stick together now and help each other out, it can only mean good things in the future. Anyways, this I found interesting that despite all the uncertainty out there right now, the Panthera Team Asia Formula One squad is still looking to be on the grid in Formula One in 2022 when the new regs come into force. So this is an Asian-backed operation with a UK base, and they stated their intention at the end of last summer to become a new F1 team in 2022. They were hoping to join the World Championship in 2021, but that's you know that's changed, and that was basically because Ross Brawn said last August that any teams looking to come into the sport would have to wait until at least 2022 at the earliest. So the team boss at Panthera Team Asia is a fellow by the name of Benjamin Durand, and he said that that the delay in the subsequent world health crisis has not put their efforts to get into F1 to an end, and he said, quote, it's been quite a roller coaster, but we are still alive. The project is not done. We were already aiming for 2022 before 2022, aiming for 2022 before the current crisis hit, and we are still looking for a way in. End quote. So that is interesting. That despite all the things that that are ongoing, that they're still looking to get into the sport in 2022. Of course, the Concorde Agreement is still undecided upon, and that is up at the end of the year. So there are a lot of moving targets in F1 at the moment, but. It would be great to see another team come in. I mean, we've lost a couple in recent time, including Marussia, Manor, Caterham. Some of these teams have kind of gone into to different different variations or just disappeared altogether. I mean, Lotus morphed into Renault, and they're still around, sort of. They're there, but they haven't lived up to some of our expectations. So good news to see that there's still interest out there to bring other teams into Formula One. Anyways, just to finish it up with a couple of quick and short things here. So the Ferrari F1 test that Denny Kvyat had in 2018 really played a crucial part in his Formula One comeback at Toro Rosso, which is now AlphaTauri. And Kvyat, he kind of really went on a downward spiral after he'd made it all the way up to Red Bull in 2016, then was switched for Max Verstappen, who obviously has never looked back since moving up. Anyways, Kvyat was out of Formula One for a while. I mean, he was still a simulator and a development driver at Ferrari. And anyways, he was given another chance at Formula One by Helmut Marko, who is the Red Bull Motorsport advisor. Anyways, in 2019, Kvyat partnered Alex Albon and then Pierre Gasly when Gasly kind of mirrored Kvyat, not in an envious kind of way, when he was promoted then to Red Bull and then demoted back to Toro Rosso in favor of Alex Albon. So anyways, Kvyat did say that because of his part of his 2018 simulator role with Ferrari, he was handed a Pirelli wet tire test in April of that year at Fiorano, which is Ferrari's test track. And the test was made with the Ferrari SF71H. And he said it made a really big impression on him and really strengthened his motivation and his resolve to chase a comeback into Formula One. And I think that that's great because when he was back in last year, we didn't see quite the reckless, kind of crazy Danny Kvyat. I mean, he got a podium in Hockenheim. Obviously, the weather played a bit of a role in that. But he looked to me a more mature, focused driver last year in Toro Rosso. So that's good for him. Anyways, Renault staff said that they worked in what they called an unthinkable scenario at Red Bull. And well, that's not really a surprise. I mean, by the time that, you know, they finally parted ways a couple of years ago, I mean, they had a very successful run, obviously, in the normally aspirated era of Formula One before the switch to the turbo hybrid era. And then after a while, I mean, there was a lot of complaining, more from Red Bull. It didn't really see too much in the public realm from Renault in those days. But Horner was very critical of them, basically right from the very first year. I remember stories going back to I'm thinking that 2014, even the first year where he was complaining that that Renault had just not got it right, and their power units, new power units, just didn't have the oomph that say Ferrari or Mercedes did back then, and it steadily deteriorated over the years. By the time it was all said and done, they to me it was just kind of like an old married couple that had been together way too many years and way much longer than they should have, and obviously didn't get along and like each other, but were almost like they were staying together because they just couldn't get apart, and they were just doing it for looks only. Obviously, it was a little bit more complex than that, but it was a move that obviously worked out for Red Bull. I mean, I think the move to Honda Power really raised a lot of eyeballs, or eyebrows, I should say, when the announcement was made. But having the opportunity to look at Renault Power and Honda Power in the Toro Rosso's, that season, really helped in that decision. Anyways, Fernando Alonso, he claims that his 2021 plans are more or less set. Fernando also has to pop up every once in a while. So his last Formula One appearance was at the end of 2018, and he's since then raced in the World Endurance Championship, the Dakar Rally, and he's also due to enter the Indianapolis 500 again. I mean, he's had a couple of cracks at it. He's still trying to win the Triple Crown. He's won at Le Mans a couple times. He's won at Monaco, double world champion in F1. Anyways, he said that he's understood the rule change delay in Formula One until 2022. And he said all along, and this is true, he said that in 2021, if there are new rules in 2020, or sorry, at that point, he may come back because maybe it'll be more interesting. The cars are more balanced, I guess, more fun to drive. And he's hungry. He's looking for that challenge. And he said that now that the rules have been obviously delayed till 2022, he said it's bad news in a way, but he said he knows basically more or less what he's doing, and he didn't really give too many hints, but he said many more of you will know soon. I mean, that's fine that he says he might want to come back at some point in the future. I mean, he's already around 40, so the big question for me is not whether or not Fernando wants to come back to Formula One, but who's going to take him if he decides to do so. Anyways, that's it. That's the time to leave it and wrap it up for another show this week. Thank you very much for downloading and listening to the show. If you want to get in touch, please do so by sending me an email at scuderiaf1pod@gmail.com or tweet me on Twitter at scuderiaf1pod. And that's it. Have a great week. Stay safe, stay healthy, take care of each other, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to scuderiaf1pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at scuderiaf1pod@gmail.com.